studies have gotten into studying comics from the perspective of some other program. So, and in a way, this is what I would really recommend. I mean, if you could get into a panel, into a program on comic studies, that would be great, right? But as you can see, both of those degrees that you can get in comic studies are really degrees in something else, right? They're both degrees in English. And the reason that's important, if you want to be a scholar that focuses on comic studies professionally, and that's not the only way to get into comic studies by any means, but it is, you know, we like to get paid for what we do, right? Then you also really have to do something else in order to get a job. And there, the wonderful thing about comic studies as a field is that it is made up of a bunch of different disciplines, approaches, ways of doing business. I'm going to list just a few here to give you the flavor of the kinds of things that happen in comic studies. There now, if you got a copy of the program, many of the presentations that will be taking place in this room, as well as in some of the other tracks, are examples of comic studies at work. I'm just going to give you a kind of abstract sense of what the different approaches are today. Okay. One major way of doing comic studies is what is called formal analysis. Right? This has been traditionally a very sort of central part of the field. The main question being, what are comics? How to define comics? Right? And the main figure in this area is a fellow named Scott McCloud, who's not actually an academic. He was a comic. He was a guy who made comics, right? A number of different mainstream superhero comics, and then he did some independent comics of his own. But he's become very famous for his works, Understanding Comics, Reinventing Comics, and Making Comics, which are fabulous books. And Understanding Comics has been, for decades now, an important part of the field of comic studies, in which he really tries to give a specific definition of what comics are in terms of not the content. It's not about people in capes and tights, right? It's about juxtaposed images in sequence. That's not exactly right, but that's close. Juxtaposed pictorial images in sequence, I think, is the definition. The fields where you would do this kind of work are primarily connected to media studies, right? And art or art history departments are focusing on the medium or the form of the comics as a form of expression. Another major approach to comics is what you might call narrative analysis and the related field of genre studies. This is really looking, it's really the opposite of formal analysis. What you're doing is looking at the content of the comics and doing same kind of analysis that you would do with a work of literature, right? So literature and English departments, often people working in this area focus on that. Very similar to the parts of film studies that focus on the content of film rather than the particular techniques and formal qualities. Another field that looks at comics is called cultural studies. That's a bit of a tricky one too, because it, like comic studies, it's not really a discipline, right? It's more of a way of doing research that's common in history, English, and different fields. Comics have been important in history, especially the history of pop culture and mass media. In departments of communication, some of the top comic scholars are communication scholars. Randy Duncan is one of the co-authors of the textbook, The Power of Comics, which I would recommend to you if you haven't heard of it. Power of Comics is a great textbook. Is in a communication department. Journalism departments, there's some focus on comics. Joe Sacco, probably the most famous comics journalist. There's some interest there. Actually, a lot of people now in philosophy who are studying comics in one way or another. I'm a philosopher, that's my main home field. I got into comics primarily by looking at comics with a kind of philosophical content to them. There are a number of popular books about comics and philosophy, superheroes and philosophy. There are also more technical studies. Jeff McLaughlin, I actually don't know where he's at anymore, is a major figure there. Political economy, right? So this is the sort of theoretical part of political science. There's some study of comics in that area. feminist theory and gender studies has had a lot of interest in comics lately. Ethnography and anthropology, related fields, are a lot of the focus when it comes from, you move from studying the comic book itself to studying comic people who make the comics and the people who consume the comics. Right? So there's a lot of interesting, especially fan ethnography work going on, which I like. And then work in linguistics. There's a few people, and in cognitive science, there's a guy named Neil Cohn, who has been at Tufts, I think he's still at Tufts, who argues that comics are a language unto themselves and have a linguistic structure, much like written or spoken language. One really useful graduate resource, if you want to do graduate work in comic studies, is this Caroline and Irwin Swan Foundation, a foundation for caricature and cartoons. What this does is it provides money, significant money, for one or a small handful of MA or PhD students every year who whose main research is on something related to caricature, cartoons, and this includes comic art. Okay.
The Lent Scholarship.
So now, this is if you want to, these are the things, information that if you want to go and study some field of humanities or social sciences, which would be relevant to doing scholarship on comics. Now suppose that you're through with graduate work, or you are not interested in undertaking graduate work, but you still are interested in working on comics. There are a few issues that comic scholars have to deal with, which are special to the field, which are really basic issues that we've had some nice presentations here in the past on, and I just wanted to summarize a few of the main issues which I find interesting and to think about. The first is the question of how to mark a comic. Right? Okay, what is that? What does that mean? Well, those of you who have read books for scholarship, there's a classic text by Mortimer Adler, How to Mark a Text. You underline, you highlight, you write in the margins. I do a lot of studying history and philosophy. I have a sort of whole system for how to mark things in the margins that I'm going to want to come back to later. This is a difficult thing to do with a comic book for a bunch of reasons. Number one, it's all pictures, right? It's really hard to highlight things one side of the page to the other, pictorial. And they don't include margins on the side, right? Nice thick margins for you to write in. It's a surprisingly difficult problem. Teresa Fine Pausey is someone who, name is cut off here for some reason, who's done work in this on this very question. She does a lot of work in comic studies and has thought a lot about this. These are sort of demonstration pieces she's shown. So using color to highlight can help, right? Using writing in different colors or using arrows in different colors can help you pick things out a little bit. But even these things would be hard to do on the comic page itself. She's got a system which I find very interesting, I've never actually put to use. Whenever she's going to study a comic, she buys two copies, one to keep safe, right?
Just in case, right?
She takes the other copy, and she gets that big thing they have in the office in your department, chops the margin right out of it, puts it through a scanner, through an AutoFed scanner, and she does all this stuff on her computer, right? She works very heavily on the computer. That's not my style, but that's something you can do to help. Giving presentations, that kind of stuff is helpful too. Another thing that has been a difficult issue in the past is the question of how to cite a comic. Right? If you're writing a paper or giving a presentation about comics, how do you tell your audience what to refer to? Until a few years ago, there were no standards about this. There were no rules. Now, luckily, the Modern Language Association, the MLA, you probably all remember, if you're not in school or working scholars now, you all remember this from college or high school, having to write bibliographies in MLA. Now they have a whole section on how to do both comic strips and graphic novels. how to refer to them, how to differentiate referring to the artist from referring to the writer, things like this. There's still not a lot of standardization in how to refer to page number and panel location, right? So you kind of have to just develop a system and make it clear. And it is a real problem in the sense that lots of comics come in many different non-standard forms, right? So if I'm talking about some particular run of Wonder Woman or Batman, right, then that's going to exist in single issue format. It's going to exist in trade paperback collections. Maybe there's an absolute edition too. And there's no attempt to make it possible to consistently refer to page numbers between those different editions. So that can be tough, and you just have to be clear. Another issue for comic scholars that you have to think about is how to quote a comic, right? You want to refer to some panel or page in a paper. You want to do a close analysis of it. How do you do it? Well, you can just bring out the words and talk about the words, but for most of the time, it's not just the words that matter, right? It's also what's going on the page, and that gets difficult. You can cut and paste a page from a comic into a PowerPoint presentation like this, right? But if you're writing a paper for a class or a book or a journal, you get into the issue of copyright. Right? Now, I believe, and many other scholars believe, that quoting for analysis, copying and pasting a panel or a set of panels or even a page would be a legitimate fair use of the comics. But publishers on both sides, the academic publishers and the comics publishers, tend to frown on that and tend to expect you to pay licensing fees. And so there's a legal issue here, which is, I find personally, difficult to overcome. Okay. Well, now, suppose you've read your comics, you've started writing about comics, you've settled these issues for yourself, then what are you going to do with the work that you produce? Right? Well, there are two things that all scholars do with the work they produce. We present it at conferences, we publish it in journals and in books. I'm not going to talk about book publishing today, I'm just going to talk about conferences and journals. I'm just going to provide you a long list so you get a sense of the kinds of places you can present your work. I can put these slides up on our website after this presentation. So that you can go and look at them. You don't have to try to scribble out on all the names. I have to say, in the last 5 years since I've really started doing this kind of work, the number of opportunities has skyrocketed. This is a wonderful time to be doing this kind of research. As a graduate student, as a professor, even as an independent scholar, the number of possible places to present is amazing. The first, let me just mention purely academic conferences. These are the conferences that, as far as I can tell, are all ongoing every year, every other year, or in one case, every third year, right? There's an area at the Pop Culture Association, the comics and comic art area, which they have every year this conference, and they do a whole track there. It's a huge conference. University of Florida, as I said, is a big center for comic studies. They do a conference, I think, every year. International Comic Arts Forum at the University of Oregon, I think it's every other year. The Comics Forum at Leeds University in the UK. University of North Texas in Denton, Texas has an every other year conference, comic studies conference. There's the International Bande Dessinée Society. Who knows what Bande Dessinée means? No clue. It's French comic French, right? So, 10-10, right, is a classic of Bande Dessinée. Michigan State University has a comics forum that's regular. And there are every year half a dozen or more one-off conferences or other events that you can submit work to. There are also, now these are a bit distinct from academic conferences at comics conventions, which is an interesting different kind of thing because you're not just presenting to other scholars, you're presenting to a subset of the people who go to that convention, who are fans. Sometimes you have creators in the audience. And it's a different kind of conversation. I've done a lot of these conferences. I mean, I've run this conference, and I've done the one at San Diego Comic-Con. And I have to say that these are always a bigger, more interesting, friendly audience than at a regular so there's one here, Dragon Con. We do it every year. On the back of your program is all of our information. So if you want to present here next year, you can get on the mailing list or the Twitter and find out when that comes out. They do one at San Diego Comic Con. The great thing about San Diego Comic Con is if you get in, you get a free badge, right? They're really treated like professionals there. There's one at WonderCon. There's one at the Festival of Cartoon Art, which is done at Ohio State University, that they have both a more of a comics convention and an academic conference there. There's a new one at ACON in Dallas, the big anime manga convention, called the Fans Conference. They have one at New York Comic Con. They have one at C2E2 in Chicago. They have one at Project Comic Con in St. Louis as well. And I'm sure this is not an exhaustive list. And the other thing that's changed a lot just over the last few years is the number of academic journals that exist for this work. So Image Text is an old journal, IJOCA, International Journal of Comic Art, is an older one. But a lot of these other journals have started up in the last few years, Journal of Graphic Novels and Comics, European Comic Art, Studies in Comics. There are lots of places to get this work published. Image and Narrative is not only for comics, it's all kinds of, image and narrative studies, but comics is becoming a big thing for that journal. You can also get this kind of stuff published in a lot of pop culture studies, cultural studies, media studies journals. Welcome work on comics. Some feminist journals, if you do that kind of feminist gender studies stuff, accept that as well. And the last thing I'm just going to mention is that there are some online resources. The big ones are the Comic Scholars Listserv at the University of Florida English Department again. If you just search for comics with an X Scholars Listserv, you'll find that first link. And this comicsresearch.org has a lot of links. Some of them are out of date, but a lot of them are fresh, to all kinds of different things about the history of comics and the study of comics. And there's a few others there. That's all the sort of formal presentation I wanted to do. It took a little longer than I wanted. But it's a lot of information there, which I'm happy to bring back up if you want to look at it again, any of the pages. I will see if we have any comments from our panelists, and then we'll open it up for Q&A. Anybody want to add anything?
I'll go. Yeah. Most regular conventions, anime cons, things like that, will accept academic presentations. I did one at Anime St. Louis, I think, and I did one at another convention on Buddhist themes and Mobile Suit Gundam. So most anime conventions and most conventions of that sort will accept academic presentations as panels, not attached to any particular conference. I've done a couple of things at Anime Central up in Chicago and some stuff within the Southern Illinois region. So it's not just large conferences and not just academic conferences that will allow you to do comic stuff.
Go ahead.
I was just going to chime in for a sec. I've done two presentations off of my dissertation. One was for the National Association of Media Literacy Education, and the other one was actually for the Ethnographic and Qualitative Research Conference. So it makes sense, media literacy, he mentioned that. That's one of my claims academically, but the Ethnographic and Qualitative Research Conference, I was a little shocked at, but I got in. And my dissertation was a qualitative study, interviews and whatnot, and observations. But, it is becoming more accepted, I think. I kind of thought, well, I'm going to apply because it's a prestigious conference, and, you know, I was really stoked when I got in. So.
Also, another opportunity is to be able to take the skills that you gain in doing comics research or doing research and academia elsewhere, the writing research talents, editorial talents, the ability to collate large amounts of information, and to then be able to apply that to writing about comics in other fora. I mean, if you have academic training and are interested in comics journalism, as one of the resources that Matt talked about earlier, having that ability to research, to mark, to understand the language of comics makes that writing that much more fruitful, makes it that much more full. And you can do things like drawing together and finding themes in seemingly unrelated works, but because you understand the language of comics, you understand the context of comics a little bit better, you're able to find what unifies them.
Go on with that. I've been reading comic books since I was 11 years old, way back in 1986, when my comic book store wouldn't let me buy Watchmen because I was too young. But I got it anyway, eventually, right? But anyway, so I agree with Damian that when I started doing research in comics and read Understanding Comics, for example, I'd been reading them for decades, you know, and I started looking at them through a different lens, a different perspective. Like, I came to understand some of the nuances in the art a little bit better. I will admit, you know, I still read comics, but every month, or heck, every 3 weeks or 2 weeks or 1 week, Amazing Spider-Man comic, however fast they put them out, you know, isn't going to offer, like, earth-shaking, ground-changing, like, you know, paneling and artwork and, like, you know, themes and stuff like that. But some of the story arcs do, over the course of the story arc. But, you know, looking at The Dark Knight Returns made a huge impression on me when I was young. I read it in seventh grade. And I got to go back in my dissertation and sort of revisit that time period when I was looking at that book, and like, images were making an impression on me, but I didn't quite understand. And I think reading Understanding Comics and reading a lot of other scholarship on comics helped me sort of understand who I was looking at. The image that sticks with me is when Batman has Superman down on the ground with his boot at his neck, you know, and like the power dynamics in that imagery, what Superman stands for as a symbol, what Batman stands for in that book, and even in our society, you know, sort of taking it up through those many different levels was just, it was exhilarating for me, and it also just made me really appreciate, I loved The Dark Knight Returns before, but it made me really appreciate it. So even if it's just from the perspective of, you know, delving into this sort of area of comics, to have a better understanding of what you're reading and appreciation of, which I'm sure you guys do already, but it's nice, it's cool.
To chime in what he said, my primary area is philosophy. I do, my area of focus is Asian philosophy. My sub-areas of focus are existential feminism, phenomenology of race, phenomenology of disability. So to take those lenses and look at comics and see the way in which comics are problematic from a feminist perspective, or from a perspective of race, or from a perspective of disability, or the way certain thematic elements are expressed in a particular manga or a particular anime, or a particular kind of visual expression as a cultural form, is one of the things that philosophy does. It deepens our relationship with the work, and it deepens our understanding of the work, and it helps us show the ways that these works can be ultimately problematic in our own society. So you start to deal with things like representation of women in comics, representation of race in comics, issues of sexuality in comics, and these things help us look at comics in more nuanced ways. So there's a real value to being a comic scholar that goes beyond putting out material to put on our CV, but in helping us come to a new relationship with comics and the production of comics and being a fan of comics. So it can enable certain kinds of personal transformations.
Riffing off of what John said about the reading of comics from, as he notes, feminist angle, from ethnicity angles. Last year, some of the things that were most interesting to audience members and conversations that we had with presenters were those kinds of readings. The groups that we had, where we had round tables like this, where we had open discussions about that kind of issue in reading comics. So that was a kind of a perfect storm for us as scholars and as readers of comics, because there was a large conversation happening on the internet, happening in comics fandom right at that time, that was just coming to a head right before we came to Dragon Con, and we had all of these panels planned for it. So timing also becomes an interesting element to your work. If you know that your work has an interested base, finding that interested base and getting them aware of the work that you're doing really can help you find even more information, help you find more people who want to have those kinds of discussions and want to perhaps put on those kinds of presentations with you, to have those conversations in a larger forum.
This is one of the things that I think is really rewarding about this field. I mean, your average philosophy professor, English professor, is doing interesting and important work, making an impact on students, but not necessarily contributing to a larger cultural conversation in which a lot of people are engaged, right? Your average English professor is not writing about books that hundreds of thousands of people are reading, this year, right? For the most part, comic scholarship is something that lots of people are interested in, and through venues like this, you get to contribute to a conversation that touches a lot of people. And I think that's really fantastic. So let's open it for questions.
What's your dissertation on that you wrote about?
Mine? It was about basically using graphic novels with advanced high school English students, and through the perspective of visual literacy, actually. So Matt mentioned kind of needing to do other things to sort of get comics in sometimes. So I went off of the media literacy and visual literacy argument that has been going on for decades, that schools do not, especially in English and language arts, do not focus on artistic elements, unless they're, phonetical or word-based, right? So I took this sort of idea, and I wanted to know what the reception would be like from these kids, along with how the teacher taught with these things. So I went and looked at all that. I found a school. It was really hard to find a school where a teacher even used graphic novels. I live in North Carolina, and I had to drive to Kentucky. And he had been doing it for a long time, too. He had been using them for about 15 years. But he didn't use, like, Persepolis. I'm not bagging on Persepolis and stuff like that. But those are, like, and Watchmen, those are, like, high level. He was using X-Men, God Loves, Man Kills, Daredevil, Born Again, Superman for All Seasons. Like, stuff that, is great stuff, but that's, like, fan stuff, And what I found was a couple of things is that the kids were very, I think I accidentally unlocked something inside of the students, because they were pretty mad that they had never been exposed to that medium until their senior year of high school, and they pointed out many opportunities where they had chances, even at just in textbooks, of looking at an image that accompanied a story, and it was totally not even a part of it. So there's more than just the comic book aspect. There's this visual literacy, media literacy, arts element. But the other interesting thing was that, this was weird to me, but only one student in a class of 18 had ever read a comic book. Now, they had seen tons of the movies. And the only reason the one kid did is because his brother collected Deadpool. That's all he could talk about is Deadpool, which is fine. But, Deadpool's interesting. But they were able, because of their traditional literacy skills, and this is kind of the whole point of the dissertation, with their incredible traditional literacy skills, they were able to read the images. They weren't good with putting jargon to them, like the words that we use about layouts, paneling, gutters, blah, 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 right? However, the kids who had art class, which was just two or three of them in my study, they could put those labels and name the elements in the images. And so it kind of showed that they were much better prepared to perform a visual literacy function, an analysis, looking at symbolism in particular. But I was pleasantly surprised to find that the kids with the traditional literacy skills were also able to do it. I had them analyze an excerpt from The Dark Knight Returns where Bruce Wayne is, you know, being tormented by the TV and he can't fight the urge to be Batman anymore. If you go back and look at that, there are hardly any words in that, like, six-page spread. A lot of panels. They were able to talk about the pacing of panels and the bat coming through the window symbolizing rebirth, just all these awesome things, you know. So, no, it was long, but it was a long dissertation.
I'd like to pick the panelists' minds in terms of two issues. One would be cross-medial research on comics, mm-hmm. right? And another one would be an cross-disciplinary methodological research on comics. And in order to contextualize this, I think I need to explain where I'm coming from. I live in Japan, I've been living there for 10 years. I've been studying video games. Mm-hmm. And I'm now interested in looking how certain narratives, say Ghost in the Shell, for example, the way it happens in Japan, it happens to an extent in the United States as well, is that if a manga becomes famous, it will be made into an anime. And the anime, and it will be made into a video game, right? Or vice versa, no matter where you start from, right? So, and it happens to an extent in the United States, but I don't think it's as pervasive, right? But Ghost in the Shell expresses, it has cultural contents about Japanese culture, right? So I'm interested in studying that, but I'm interested in studying how Ghost in the Shell, through the anime and through the manga and through the video games, are expressing that. So I'm doing two things there. First, it's cross-medial, it's transmedial mm-hmm. analysis, right? Yeah. And another thing is that I'm doing formal analysis, I'm doing narrative analysis, I'm doing cultural analysis, mm-hmm. I'm doing media studies, mm-hmm. you know? So I don't know anything about American comics, I have sure. to sure. be honest. Mm-hmm. I wanted to see what's been done in that area, I wanted to pick your minds on the issue, etc.
Good, that's a good question. So can I start?
Yeah, sure, go on.
I mean, the first thing I would say is there's a whole field of adaptation studies, right? Which is dominated by people writing about moving between books and films. Right? But there has been some discussion of film to video game, and more recently between written like novels and comics and comics and films. It's a growing and eclectic field, and it's definitely one that is ripe for discussions of the kind you're talking about. The second thing is I put up earlier this big list of different fields, right? I wasn't putting this up here to encourage people to put their work in boxes, right? I think a lot of good work uses multiple approaches, right? You have to have some starting points. That was sort of the point of this. But so I think it's not only acceptable; it's quite common to use different components of this sort of list to focus on something. Jonathan, you wanted to?
Yeah, with regards to your question, how do you do that kind of analysis in philosophy? At least in my area of aesthetics, when I want to talk about the way a narrative changes, at least in the context of the Ghost in the Shell, right? From the original Mamoru Oshii manga to the movie to Innocence to Standalone Complex to Second Gig to the three movies to 2.0 and then now to Arise
the two games.
And the two video games, right? Each one of these occupies a different social and narrative context, right? The narratives expressed in, say, Standalone Complex bear similarities to Ghost in the Shell, the original movie, which bear similarities to Ghost in the Shell in the manga format, but each one presents a different kind of aesthetic mode. So there's a continuity of themes that are all presented in different aesthetic modes, and what I do in philosophy would be to study the way in which the aesthetic mode changes the presentation of the theme and how that theme is taken up by the people who consume the media. So one of the big differences between Ghost in the Shell, the video game, and the series would be a video game, you are almost embodying the character, right? Versus a manga or an anime where there is a distance between the character and the person reading or watching the anime. A manga will produce a particular kind of frustration at a particular plot twist, but it's not the same kind of frustration when the Uchikoma crushes you for the fifth time. Right? This does something different within the narrative. Your embodiment of the character within a video game does something different to you when you're experiencing the narrative. Unlike, watching what happened to Saito in the original standalone complex and Kusanagi's response to that, right? These are different ways of experiencing the same kind of thematic things. And what philosophy, or at least aesthetics, would do is study the way in which these things are both similar and different, depending on the media.
And then, because it seems like you're wanting to do some ethnographic and anthropological work in there as well, to then take that discussion of the ways in which those presentations and engagements are different, and to talk about what those differences then mean to the specific culture that you're looking at. What it means from a Japanese cultural context to engage Kusanagi's point of view in the video game in that particular mode, and to then bring all of those elements together. Ultimately, what we're saying is that you're going to end up doing a lot more work. Mm-hmm. You're going to end up doing a lot more research from a lot of different perspectives. But if you want to get all of those elements and talk about all of those elements between the video games, the films, the shows, the manga, you're going to have to be able to talk about each of them from those perspectives.
Aesthetic modes.
Yeah.
Has there been any cognitive studies that establish clearly that people learn better through comics? I mean, is literacy hastened by way of the...
Not that I can think of specifically to that. Neil Cohn's work is really good for that, as far as looking at it from comics as a language, sequential images as a language themselves, and then kind of going into that area, linguistics and semiotics and stuff like that. You can start kind of piecing that idea together. The only thing that I can say is, to kind of answer your question in a different realm, I suppose, is the idea, like I spoke about in my dissertation, the idea of looking at images and learning how to analyze them and understand what they are conveying through the art, does make you expands your literacy repertoire, basically. So there's arguments about people being visually illiterate in education, which I think is pretty accurate. If we think about our society, I mean, even some of you in the audience are like displaying visual representations, right? All of us, really, but some of you more than others. And reading and understanding that, most people just sort of, just it goes by you, right? So in that sense, yes. But not anything that I can think of directly. Sturgis, do you know of anything?
I can tell you a couple of things. I'm like a ringer.
Yeah. He is, man.
Because I teach at the University of Tennessee, Knoxville, and I'm in the education department. And I do a lot of stuff on comics. I did my dissertation, I published a couple of studies on it, on adult readers and what it is that they get out of comic books and why they read them. And it doesn't speak to like cognitive purposes, because really that's the way I'm interactive stuff and doing interview studies. And what I found is that a lot of how they talked about reading comics was how something like English majors or people that admire literature talk about reading literature, like aesthetic things, technical things. Some of them were almost like habit forms. They talked about reading comics like a habit, or reading comics is almost like visiting with a friend or something like that. And you know, I can't speak to it cognitively, but in those sense, there were a lot of uses that did cross over to academic use. I know that there's a study, and I was going to look it up on my phone. It hasn't been published yet, and it's coming out of, it's not coming from education journal. And I look at literacy, I'm a literacy person, so I'm looking at reading, and a lot of my research is on, actually just trying to, a lot of teachers around me want to get graphic novels in their classrooms because they feel like their kids are struggling, and they think these are the comics that will help them because comics are easy to read. What I found in my study is that most people that read comics long-term aren't troubled or struggling readers.
Yeah.
They tend to be very accelerated readers or very capable readers. So there's a question in my mind about are they helpful for struggling kids or not. I think that they're attracted to struggling kids because in general I've seen that about half the kids I give comics to haven't ever seen a comic. Most of the people that have seen comics have seen manga. But what I was saying before, there's an economics journal and it's at the college level, but they compare reading a straight print textbook to reading a graphic novel textbook of economic concepts, and they found substantial improvement, substantially increased achievement in the people that read the graphic novels. They recall
I forgot about that concept.
And it's coming out soon, I know that, but that's the one off the top of my head. I'm working on a lit review right now about basically what education people know about reading comics, and we have 40 studies, but only really 40 out of 40, only four of them are actually research. And most of them are people saying, and it's not anything against them, it's mostly people like me or like, us, we're like, I read a bunch of comics and I learned things from it and I'm telling you about it. And that's not, we're supposed to learn from the wisdom of learned people, right? So there's something to that, but the way the government, the way education right now, they don't look at that as research, they look at that as storytelling. They want something that's like an experiment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Some, like economics thing. So there's a treatment and there's a test and somebody figures out something. So there's not a whole lot of that yet. But there are people, and one of the things I thought was fascinating is we're talking about those marketing up studies. There's a guy in Arkansas, Sean Connors. And I don't think he published it, but his dissertation was on, he interviewed high school students about, basically they talked through how they read. Like they would read, he'd give them comic books, and they would explicitly be like, I did this, and then I look at that, and I look at that, and I did, it was kind of like the marking, but verbally. And, that stuff is speaking to comprehension, and how students comprehend stuff. And I'm sorry.
You made me remember something. Sort of, I think I was going too specific. Backing out of comics, you can actually look at, I can't remember his first name and I can't remember the book. There's a guy named Gombrich, like a psychoanalysis of imagery, right? And then there's Rudolf Arnheim. His book, Visual Thinking, talks a lot about what art does for us cognitively. And then there's also Elliot Eisner, who's an arts educator, and he's got a book called Reading the Arts, I think, or something like that.
Those
would be excellent places to start. I use those pieces of scholarship to discuss the idea of what comics do for us is from, I guess, a semiotic perspective. And I discuss, like, cognition, but I'm not in learning and cognition. I'm in media studies. I'm in education, but I'm in media studies. But those, I would definitely recommend Rudolf Arnheim and Elliot Eisner. And I can't think. Gombrich is Gombrich, I think. I can't remember the book, but those would set you way on the path to that. And I mean, it's just like we brought up earlier. In some ways, it's extrapolating, right? I mean, just because somebody's looking at Renoir or Monet or whatever, and their perspectives are being changed, doesn't mean somebody can't look at Frank Miller's work, or and have that same like profound shift or whatever. So that's a way to start.
From simple, that's the reason why IKEA puts their instructions with diagrams and process
them. Well, yeah, look up Gunther Kress too. Then he talks about multimodalities. And I was kind of thinking it might help you, but I'm not certain, because that was quite a question. But anyway, multimodalities, he talks about using what diagrams do for us and how we understand them versus just a list of instructions and things like that. So that ought to get you. That's some high-flying stuff, but that ought to get you there. Yeah.
So in the back here.
I think you missed one field that I saw application was museums and archives, because it uses everything you guys talked about contextually, but also treats the comic book as an artifact.
I can speak to that. The inframing of comic books in a museum space, which then elevates the comic to a work of art, right? People, there's a philosopher named Arthur Danta who says art is whatever the art world says it is, and when you inframe something like a comic book in a museum, in museum studies, and there's a lot of museum studies work that speaks to this, it achieves a certain level of cultural notoriety, right? So when you, to give a pat example, when they put the model of the Starship Enterprise in the Air and Space Museum, it did something in the culture. Mm-hmm. It rippled outwards. It changed the way we look at the Enterprise. Mm-hmm. It changed the way we look at Star Trek. I almost made a faux pas there. I might not have made it out of the room. But the same thing happened when the Smithsonian ran its exhibition on video games, mm-hmm. right? Post that exhibition, you see more aesthetic analysis of video games, more narrative analysis of video games, more treating video games as a legitimate form of aesthetic expression and cultural expression than ever before, when people would still fight over, is a video game a work of art? Should we even study video games seriously? When studying video games would be a death knell to your academic career. So museum studies, the kinds of things you're pointing at, are extremely important fields. What happens to a comic book? What happens to a video game? What happens to a television show when you inframe it in a museum? What does that do to the work? Like, it elevates That's it cool. to a level on par something with something like a Picasso or a Rembrandt. People will come and stare at it as an installation. When it becomes an installation, it becomes an icon of cultural production, right? It becomes something more than what it than the plebeian thing that people consider it to be. And this is why museum studies is extremely important.
You also mentioned archiving. There's this role for chemists here too.
Yeah.
The libraries are what? A lot of libraries are acquiring, especially university libraries, are acquiring large archives, donated archives of comic books. And those of you who know, especially old comic books, are extremely difficult to preserve because they were printed with basically pure acid on
pure acid.
So they tend to disintegrate.
I got one I'm struggling with.
Apparently there are challenges to preserving comic books. Library archivists have to know a lot of chemistry in order to in order to do it. It's harder than preserving 15th century manuscripts. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's
Can I give props real quick to when I first started studying comics, I looked at the historical nature of comic scholarship, and I think Matt said there are the opportunities have multiplied, and I think you can give credits to some of that because of the films and their success. Thank you, Marvel, but and maybe DC. It was interesting because when you start looking at comic scholarship, it's kind of dead for the 70s and, maybe on into the 80s when sort of graphic novel term takes hold. Librarians are the ones who really have been proponents of bringing these texts into schools and back into, our reading lexicon, which is great because they were sort of the ones to a degree that were responsible for destroying it early on, because librarians in the 30s and 40s were adamantly opposed generally to having this material in schools, and they sort of control or sort of our idea of what is literature, right? So we have a library studies department at UNC where I went for graduate school, and they have an amazing library of comics, and then Duke University out of Durham has an incredible archive of comics. I mean, it's amazing. They really are kind of leading pioneers again, I think.
I'm trying to get we've got several hands up and not a lot of time, so let's try to get quick questions. We've got someone in the back who's had her hand up for a while, and then we'll get you. And then,
Not a question, but just a comment in terms of research resources for any of you who are graduate students.
I stepped down after a couple of terms as the division head of the International Conference on the Fantastic in the Arts. We're annual as well,
okay,
out of Orlando right now, okay, and we're sort of, we do the same thing with PCA. We focus on fantasy, sci-fi, and horror, and film, literature, and all sorts of pop culture, and video games, graphic novels. And unlike PCA, which, as the panel mentioned, there's sort of a gap between things here and things there, we have our academic track, but we also have creators come in as well. So we have tracks with our writers. Neil Gaiman is our guest, an honor guest, and we have a guest scholar and a guest academic, and Charles Bass Christian, a guest in the survey studies director. And he was contributed to that word, IAFA.org, or a little bit more.
Thank you very much.
You guys were obviously fans before you were scholars. I wonder if your tendency to analyze and deconstruct ever impedes your ability to now to really become engrossed by a work of comic art.
Is this the question, can we turn it off?
Well, there's yeah. A, yeah. Well, yeah. Oh, go ahead. You,
all right, yeah. I went and saw Pacific Rim, right? And I turned it all the way off. Uh-huh. Robots smashing big monsters, right?
Awesome.
I turned it all the way off, and then I turned it back on and started talking about embodiment of the two pilots in a robot. What does it mean that Stacker Pentecost adopted the Japanese culture to deal with Mako Mori? The way in which you drive a robot with your mind as becoming one with it, yep, right? All these philosophical issues I brought back up after I turned my philosopher's brain on, after I'd seen it for like the third time. So, yes, you can turn it off. It's not, yeah, it turns off. If we couldn't turn it off, we couldn't enjoy it, I don't think.
There's
a first, analyst later.
Right? Depends on the work.
There's a... In media studies, and actually my first career was in film, and so communication, film, and filmmaking. And one of the things that they talk about in media studies is once you sort of begin to watch television and films through a critical lens, you start seeing things, not just flaws in like production, or from my perspective or production's perspective, I can see flaws in production or like continuity issues that sort of were missed by, you know, most people. And it does sort of kill your enjoyment, because you're watching the film and then boom, something happens and you're like, I am out of this, right? But it's not been written about a lot, but there is some discussion, I think, by Buckingham, David Buckingham, that you sort of come out of that, though, and you can begin to be able, you don't have to cut it off. You can look at it through both eyes. Like, you can look at it through the critical perspective and through the enjoyment perspective, you know, and analyze it for what it is. You now know, I mean, this was the weird, I'm getting a little off track for a second. I told my graduate students, and, you know, do you realize that the TV show Survivor is edited?
Yeah.
They didn't know. Like, I mean, you know, it was like, I stopped watching a few years ago, but I was like, have you noticed, like, everybody likes Russell because he's in, like, every scene? I mean, it's, like, cut to, like, manipulate you, you know? But then you can move past it, right? But now with comic books, I will admit that I have a stack of comic books on my nightstand, like, this high. And it's because I love Spider-Man, and I think Superior Spider-Man was awesome for a few issues because it got into that like psychoanalysis type of situation and stuff. But then, you know, here comes Spider Slayer, and woohoo, we're back to comic book world again. And it's like, I can't, it's harder for me to appreciate it when it gets into that stuff. And so my comic book store owner is always like, you know, I'm like, well, you cancel Superior Spider-Man, stop pulling it, you know? Because I need those more meaty, like, deeper arcs. I still appreciate the comics. I read them and I enjoy them, but I've noticed a marked slowdown in my consumption of it. So I guess it can have an issue.
Do you feel like in the past 5 years or so been a graphic novel or a series that's come out that could possibly be on par with the Watchmen and the Dark Knight Returns?
The Walking Dead.
You can only analyze, you know, the Mona Lisa so many times.
Sure. Yeah. I will second that. The Walking Dead, in the way in which it presents certain kinds of thematic elements, certain kinds of cultural things. Yes, I'd also throw Kick-Ass, Wanted, and
at least Kick-Ass first story arc.
Yeah. Well, no, all three of them, because they represent different kinds of things that we, as a culture, say is valuable, right? Mm. It represents different kinds of cultural meaning, and sometimes those cultural meanings aren't always good, right? And so, if you're looking for something on par with Watchmen that you can analyze, right? Kick-Ass, Wanted, Nemesis, Walking Dead. They give you a whole range of different cultural values. And then Civil War, right?
Yeah.
Civil War, Avengers versus X-Men, Flashpoint, New 52, right? Look at all of those through a critical lens and you get something. Now, I'm not saying storytelling's on par with Watchmen, I got with the travesty that was 52. But from a point of critical analysis, these things say a lot of stuff, especially when you look at the way in which these new imprints are trying to capture the imaginations of a whole new generation of comics fan who's had exposure to anime, who's seen The Dark Knight Rises, who's seen Man of Steel, who's seen the travesties that were the X-Men movies, right? They're trying to recapture these imaginations. So they do specific things. So these things make them extremely worthy of analysis by virtue of what they do.
One of the things that's interesting about comics in the last 10 or 20 years, since, you know, post-Watchmen, is the explosion of work in other genres besides the superhero genre. Mm. A lot of the experimental and really innovative and interesting and meaty stuff for analysis is happening in other, you know, other kinds of comics, autobiographical comics, fantasy comics, all sorts of other things.
Also, to go completely in a different direction, I've occasionally been staring at the back right corner because there's a gentleman currently wearing a Nowhere Men shirt, and it's amazing.
I was going to mention.
Nowhere Men is one of the best comics going out right now. It is from the perspective of a world in which in the 60s, instead of the Beatles, we get a group of science heroes. We get a group of science as rock and rollers. They make science as cool as music had been previously, and the world that that develops, the world that that makes, becomes a radically different world when it gets to 2013. Mm-hmm. It is a fantastic comic, and one of our former panelists, actually, Stephanie Knoll, is the one who introduced me to this comic, and I thank her for it every day.
Saga, maybe, too.
Saga.
Thematically, aesthetically, Saga is a brilliant, brilliant piece of work. And also, to go in a different Kirkman direction, I would say Invincible was fantastic work, and also Jonathan Hickman's work on S.H.I.E.L.D. Jonathan Hickman's S.H.I.E.L.D. work is, if you're into things that are a little bit weird, a little bit little bit super science occulty, but with a really deep philosophical and cultural undercurrent, very good work to go with.
Transmetropolitan is the last one I throw out there.
All right, we can geek out about titles all day.
Later. Preacher.
Preacher.
Yeah.
Okay, very quick.
Getting back to how to become a comics guy.
Yes, please.
Okay, I'm inspired. I want to write something. I'm all good. You showed some websites up. Where's like the best way in order to get to, okay, approximately how many pages do you want? How do I submit to you?
Yeah. Each of these journals has a web page. Each of the web pages has a prominent link. So, you know, guidelines for submission or guidelines for authors. You know, I think the right length to think about in terms of writing a paper is usually the 5,000 to 8,000 word mark. They usually measure in words rather than pages. And they'll have specific instructions in terms of formatting and so forth for submission. They'll have an electronic submission system, and it's
there's no like favorite, no one like pays the best or anything like that.
That'd
be awesome to be a
pay. Yeah.
That's funny.
That's a good one.
We're academic.
Yeah, we're academic.
We're
not in the hard science.
If you get to the point where you're publishing books, you might get paid a little bit. These guys are not going to pay you at all. Right. Academic title.
You might end up having to pay them.
Don't do that.
To become a comic scholar, all you have to do is take your body of academic knowledge and apply it to the thing you love.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
But being published helps.
Yes.
Helps.
Yes.
But you got to start somewhere.
Yeah.
Actually, before we end, we have one more question up front.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. One quick more question. I know that we're past time and people are going to start going, but
thank you for coming.
The source material, like, I love writing, but I love writing about the 50s and 60s, and it's very hard to find things in
yeah.
my price range.
Yeah.
So do you just, are you just restricted to what you have available?
I mean, if you got a library, I mean, if you yeah. got a library with the archives.
There's
you know?
there's a growing number of university libraries with archives that you can get in and access. Michigan State University has probably the largest and most well-established collection, but there's a growing number of collections across the country, so I would suggest doing some research there. If you're at a university, I find that my university librarian is quite amenable to buying comics for me
nice.
To put in the library. So I do a lot of work on 40s DC
yeah.
comics
yeah. Yeah.
and those old archives editions. The librarian will buy them for me. Mm-hmm. Okay, I think we're out of time. If you didn't get a program, come grab one from me. Our next panel is at 2:30 over in the West End.
I know. I probably should get one made.
We're back in here at 7 o'clock.